the Charlie Chia Foot in Real Six.
The people were, as I've stated earlier, they were more or less in a state of shock. They've never actually experienced these sort of things in the past. And it just came too sudden for them to believe. So they just carried on living in hopes. When they do meet friends, say, when? You see, always the answer is next week, next month, so forth. You see, therein the time passed. And most of them stayed at home early. Daytime, some of them went down to town, or they came out and mixed with their friends in the area. If they did not go down to town, of course, then at that time, quite a number of people would be unemployed, out of a job, because all the British commercial firms were not operating. And even then, not all the government departments were functioning. So these people had to have some sort of an outlet. And their outlet was to go down, go out, and see if any of the friends are around, where they could have a bit of a chit-chat. Of course, being very careful about whom they meet and what they say. Because in such a situation, it would be normal for some people to be inclined to carry back tales to the Japanese authorities, thus carrying favor. And it is again natural that the Japanese authorities would also engage some of the local population to spy for them, listen to what the people talk, and if there is anything subversive or against them, they would have to report it. And therein the Kempeitai stepped in. And it was common knowledge that the Kempeitai was very cruel. They used all sorts of torture, you see. And the two known places at that time from which the Kempeitai was operating was one at the New Bridge Road, having tenements in that building. They took over that building and they operated from there, in the heart of Chinatown. The other one, which was more or less the headquarters, was at the YMCA at Stamford Road. See. Of course, the people, knowing the reputation of these Kempeitai people, were extra wary and at all costs avoided any contacts or being called in to answer anything.
Which part of New Bridge Road was this Kempetai?
This Kempetai was in the SIT tenement building between along New Bridge Road, between Sago Street or Sago Lane and Smith Street. Or indirectly opposite the Pearls Hill police station.
Was there a house number?
I can't remember the house number. They were formerly a few shops on the ground floor with tenements upstairs, a three-story building.
So the Kempetai occupied the whole building?
Yes, they occupied the whole building.
Did any one of you know what did they use it for?
According to what I heard, they use it as some sort of a confinement area, you see, where suspects were brought into the building, interrogated, or tortured, as the case may be.
Did you know of anyone who were brought into that building before?
No, none of my friends or contacts. They were fortunate enough to escape, to keep clear.
During the early part of the Japanese occupation, did you know how the Japanese authorities restore law and order and other essential services?
Of course, immediately after the surrender of the British Army, the Japanese demonstrated by the cruelness and the fierce appearance of their soldiers that they would tolerate no nonsense, because the first thing they did was to establish these various sentry points along the various parts of the island through which the people would have to pass. And the sentries made it a point that everyone who passed by had to bow to them, failing which he got a cuff at the back of his head, or maybe even he was pulled into the guardhouse beside and made to stand for the whole day. You see, by these examples, they demonstrated to the people that their attitude and that they were the masters and you people were the servants and would not tolerate any rebellion or even any act which would challenge their authority. They did put it across to the people and call this, this is part of the co-prosperity sphere. And the name of Singapore was changed to Sonanto.
What about the essential services?
Yes, immediately they called, they announced for all those workers in the essential services to report back for work immediately. And of course, those that were still around reported. Otherwise, they could be reported as not cooperating with the Japanese.
How did the Japanese go about calling these people back to work?
At the time, they operated the Solan Times. And through this newspaper and through this news medium and also by word of mouth. Of course, they had only to get hold of a few people. Automatically, some people would turn up at their work sites. And all that they had to do was to call these people and say, okay, you go and call all your mates back. So therein the word spread, you see.
What about your daily necessities? Were these rationed and were there any kind of registration going on?
Oh, yes, there was. There was. They had the rationing system. They had a rationing system whereby each household, the provision shops issued ration cards to the head of each household where he stated the number of persons. So you collected your necessities from the provision shop. Whereas those that were working with the Japanese authorities, they were issued with rations.
So the whole family would be registered?
Whole family.
At the local provision shop?
Yeah. Or those that are working with the Japanese authorities.
How often did you have to go to collect your rations?
You collect it once a week, I think.
What are the products?
The essentials which they rationed out was, of course, rice, sugar, and cigarettes.
Do you remember the quantity that was issued out?
I can't recollect the quantity of rice which they issued, you see.
Was it sufficient for the family?
Well, when you talk of the word sufficient, it is very difficult, you see. For a big eater, definitely it would not be sufficient. But for the normal, it could give him 2 meals, you see. He won't starve him, neither it will fill him up.
Towards the later part of the occupation, were there any cut in the rations or was the did the quantity remain the same?
Well, since I was in Singapore only up to sometime in 1944, I think it was before the middle of 1944 when I left Singapore, it would not be fair for me to relate events for that period. than what happened in Singapore. But all that I can say, let me see. Yeah, there was something I was going to say. Well, never mind, we'll continue, see, when I comes back to my memory again. Oh, yes, one other thing which did happen is that they, sometime in 43, late, I think second half of 43 it was, each household was to provide a member to do this patrolling or so. The central point was given and the schedule was drawn up. Of course, you had supposed to be the head, and he went around and told the people the times, dates and times they were supposed to report. It was maybe once or twice a week where a member of every household took turns. See. I think it was in two shifts, some from night to midnight and a shift from midnight to morning.
Did you personally do that also?
I did for a short period. Because you don't question orders at that time, in those days, is it? Yours is to obey and not to question. So whether this comes from the local people or the Japanese authorities, it was taken for granted that this was a command from the Japanese authorities, and therein you just obeyed it. It was not worth the price to question, because one word would land you at the Kempeitai.
At that time, did you know what was the purpose of this patrolling?
Well, as I said, it was not first to question why and what for, you see? So we just dutifully went down appointed time. We just sat down there, passed the time.
You mentioned that there was a head who went around to call all of you. How was this head appointed?
In the areas, see? They go by areas. And how it was appointed, I do not know. All that I know is one day or night, you know, someone came knocking. I said, yes, you got to do this night duty. I said, all right, tell me the times.
Did he have any kind of destination?
No, no questioning. It's all taken for granted that he has the authority.
I mean, did he have any kind of uniform?
No uniform, they were just in civilian clothes.
Any badges that they
wore? No badges, you see. No badges.
Besides this night, this patrolling, was there any other kinds of compulsory labor that the Japanese asked from the local population?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Earlier you mentioned that the essential food were all
ration.
What about foodstuff like meat, vegetables and fish?
Well, that I think you had to make do yourself. It was left to your ingenuity.
Do you remember whether there was a shortage of this food?
Definitely, there was a shortage. These were considered luxuries. Of course, if you were known to work for the Japanese military authorities or the Kempeitai by the stallholders, well, you got a bit of preference. There's no doubt about that. Because they also live in fear, and they would like to curry favor in case something happened to them, you see. Where you could put in a good word on their behalf.
If you can't get this food, how would you, what would you use to supplement them?
Well, not to say exactly you can't get, but the quantity, you see. This is the quantity. But don't expect to get meat every day or fish every day. But you do get it.
What about the prices?
Prices? Well, I don't know. Some of the people manage. You see?
Earlier you mentioned that there were black marketing going on in Singapore. So what kind of goods were being black marketed?
Anything under the sun would change hands. You bought it, let's say a dollar, you could sell it at $1.50, $2 without much trouble. And therein it changed hands again.
What about foodstuff? Were these on black market also?
Oh yes, even rice, sugar, everything. Everything, you see. Everything was black market. Natural.
For example, if someone wanted to buy something, how did he know where to contact and who to contact?
If someone wanted something on the black market, there was no problem. There was no problem, you see. You could approach the stallholder on the quad sign. Therein you went in by the back door. Of course, he would have some meat or fish or whatever he's selling stacked aside. Not apparent to the eyes, you see.
What was the, I mean, was it risky to be involved in this kind of black marketing?
It depends on the type of black market activities you were involved with. As long as there was no serious complaint against you, with the exception of rice, which is the staple food, you see, the Japanese authorities tended to close a blind eye to it. Rice being the staple food, they could not afford. See, they had to ensure that everyone had a fair share.
Did you know of any incidents where people were caught for doing black marketing?
Maybe, I did hear one or two. I'm not seeing. Hearsay sometimes may not be accurate.
Were the Japanese themselves involved in this kind of thing?
Well, the Japanese, even the soldiers were to some extent involved. And even the civilians, Japanese civilians, which they sent out later on, also indirectly involved, that they did not do it openly, but did it through the local employees working under them.
So how was the cost of living like with all this black marketing going on at that time?
Well, I mean, one just simply lived from hand to mouth, as they would say. Let tomorrow take care of itself. You see.
When the Japanese came in, did they ask the local population to celebrate any kind of Japanese occasions or festivals?
Amongst their own people, they celebrated, I think, the Emperor's birthday only, see? And other than that, maybe to exhort the people to display the Japanese flag on that so-called auspicious day, all this through the news media.
Did the local population participate in the celebrating of the Emperor's birthday?
Oh no, other than the token hoisting of the Japanese flag, there was nothing.
Do you remember whether it was considered a public holiday then when there was such occasion?
Not that I recall there was any such holiday, really.
The Japanese flag, was it up only on certain days or
only
did it have to be
on that day?
It did not have to be displayed all the time.
No.
How about social life or recreation during the Japanese times?
You would say that social life was not in the dictionary. And sports. The only activity which was rampant was gambling. Where during the daytime, of course, you have got the usual chapjiki, yeah? And they started, the local people started another one, new one. They called it the chifa. I think it's something like with 36 characters or what you call it. And they open some shops, you see, where a clue was given. It was put up somewhere. Clue was given. And it was for you to guess. So some people pass the day in these activities. Others operated these gambling stalls known as a telo at the three amusement parks. It drew quite a big crowd, you see. You could move around in these amusement parks and all that, and return home without any fear of trouble. And of course, again, you have the usual gambling dens operating.
Did you know what was the Japanese attitude towards this?
As I have said, the Japanese authorities tended to close a blind eye to all these illegal activities. They were sensible in the sense that it was impossible to lock up all the people in their homes for a whole day and a whole night. episode, they had to allow the people to have some sort of